The Boy Who Heard Machines. Henry Ford was born on July 30, 1863, on a farm in Springwells Township, Michigan. But even as a boy, he seemed less interested in soil than in motion. At 12, he received a pocket watch, and by 15, he had taken apart and reassembled the watches of friends and neighbors so often that he earned a local reputation as the child who could make broken things run again. He later said two early events shaped him deeply: getting that watch and seeing a Nichols and Shepard road engine in 1875, the first machine he had seen that hinted at transport beyond horses. When his mother died in 1876, the loss stayed with him, and by 16, he left home to Detroit, choosing an uncertain workshop life over the farm his father expected him to inherit. Detroit gave Ford what the farm could not: tools, noise, pressure, and a living classroom. After apprenticing as a machinist and later returning briefly to farm work, he kept experimenting with engines, built early steam vehicles, rejected steam for light cars, and by the early 1890s was focusing seriously on gasoline power. In 1891, he joined Edison Illuminating Company, and after becoming chief engineer in 1893, he finally had enough money, time, and confidence to push his private experiments further. That work led to the quadricycle in 1896, a small self-propelled vehicle he tested on June 4th, proving that his dream had moved from notebook thinking to the street. Anyone who stops learning is old, whether at 20 or 80. Anyone who keeps learning stays young. Henry Ford. Building a car for the many. Ford's path to greatness was not smooth, and that is exactly what makes it useful to remember. His Detroit Automobile Company, founded in 1909, failed because the vehicles were too expensive and too poor in quality, and the Henry Ford Company he later left was renamed Cadillac without him. Many people would have taken those defeats as proof that their vision was too early or too impractical, but Ford treated them as training. In 1902, cars like the Racer 999 helped spread his name across America, and the mix of engineering skill, public spectacle, and relentless confidence finally drew the backing he needed to try again. That second great chance became the Ford Motor Company on June 16, 1903. Ford did not win simply because he loved machines. He won because he understood a bigger question. What if a car were designed not for the wealthy few, but for the ordinary worker, farmer, shopkeeper, and family? The answer arrived with the Model T on October 1, 1908, a car that was simple to drive, easy to repair, and sturdy enough for rough roads. Its price began at $825 in 1908 and kept falling, reaching $360 for the basic touring car by 1916, which opened the road to millions of people who had never imagined owning an automobile. The breakthrough behind that affordability was not one invention alone, but a system. In 1913, Ford introduced moving assembly belts in his plants, and the new process cut production time so sharply that factory output surged while costs kept falling. By 1914, sales had passed 250,000, and by 1918, about half of all cars in the United States were Model Ts, a sign that Ford had not merely entered the auto industry, but had reorganized daily life around speed, mobility, and distance. Farmers could reach markets faster, families could travel farther, and the middle class could buy a machine that once belonged mainly to the rich. Failure is simply the opportunity to begin again, this time more intelligently. Henry Ford. power, scale, and a complicated legacy. Ford also changed the argument about labor, even if his motives mixed idealism with control. On January 5, 1914, he announced a $5 daily wage for qualifying male employees, more than doubling what many were earning, and the decision drew skilled employees to Ford while reducing costly turnover. He believed workers should be paid enough to buy the very goods they made, and in 1926, he pushed further by adopting a 5-day, 40-hour workweek for factory employees. The message was radical for its time. Efficiency should not only enrich owners, it should also give ordinary people more dignity, more rest, and a real share in modern life. Ford's ideas didn't stay in Detroit. By the 1920s, Ford had opened or expanded plants across Britain, Canada, Germany, Australia, France, India, Mexico, and other countries. And by 1929, the company had successful dealerships on 6 continents. He believed industry, trade, and standardization could connect nations, even if history would later prove that economic progress alone could not guarantee peace. During World War II, the Willow Run factory near Detroit became one of the largest assembly operations in the world, producing B-24 bombers at astonishing speed and showing that Ford's production logic could reshape aviation just as it had transformed the automobile. Yet Henry Ford's story cannot be honestly told as a clean legend. He fought labor unions bitterly, and Ford-linked violence scarred episodes like the 1932 Hunger March and the 1937 Battle of the Overpass. Worse, through The Dearborn Independent and the collected essays published as The International Jew, he spread anti-Semitic conspiracy theories that damaged his reputation and helped feed extremism far beyond the United States. That contradiction matters. A person can expand opportunity for millions and still fail serious moral tests. And history becomes more useful when we study both the engine of achievement and the cost of blindness. Don't find fault, find a remedy. Henry Ford. When Ford died on April 7, 1947, at age 83, he had already turned the automobile from a luxury product into an everyday instrument of freedom and work. He left behind more than a company. He left a manufacturing model, a labor debate, a symbol of industrial America, and a warning that innovation without ethics is incomplete. The most inspiring part of his life is not that he became rich or famous, but that he kept asking how a machine could serve ordinary people on an ordinary day. That question still matters now, whether we build cars, software, classrooms, or entire systems for the future.